This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan, and Noelle Lim. So yesterday evening, Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin unveiled a four-phase exit plan for the nation. Each phase is expected to take about 2 months, with social sectors, including schools, to reopen gradually during phase three, which is estimated to start in September.
Yes, but ultimately, the movements from phase one to another phase will depend on three criteria: average daily COVID-19 cases, nationwide ICU capacity, and the percentage of the population fully vaccinated. So currently, Malaysia is in phase one and will transition from the next to the next phase, depending if, for example, the country will have to record an average of below 4,000 cases daily, ICU capacity easing to moderate level, whatever that means. I don't think the number was given, and 10% of the population to be vaccinated. Fully vaccinated.
So for some thoughts on the plan, we're speaking this morning to Azrul Mohamed Khalib, CEO at the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Azrul, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Now, the government has picked average daily cases, ICU capacity and percentage of the population fully vaccinated to determine how the country should move from phase to phase. What are your thoughts on these criteria?
Well, good morning, everyone. You know, on this plan, we should instead be using first the number of people who have completed the vaccinations, and I mean at least two doses, the number of people needing hospitalization or intensive care unit, the number of deaths, and the positive rate. So they should instead be using these four indicators. It is unlikely that we're going to be able to dramatically reduce the number of daily cases, even with a lockdown currently in place. The fact is that it's no longer possible for us to get these low triple digits or double digit daily infection rates. Like most countries, COVID-19 is likely to be endemic to Malaysia in the years to come, just like influenza and dengue. So the disease will be with us for a long time. So we need to focus on ensuring that we're able to screen and detect as many people as possible so that they can be treated earlier instead of presenting late and already at category 4 and 5. More than 50,000 cases have come in over the past 2 months already, serious and needing intensive care. More people have died in the past couple of weeks than the entire duration of this pandemic in Malaysia. So we need to relook at those indicators because they really don't mean much. In fact, they look like what has already been used in the past year or so.
So Azrul, do you think that we need an indicator that will, based on this criteria you mentioned there, but this is something that's going to be around for the next few years as opposed to just the end of the year when we reach some kind of exit plan?
Well, definitely. If you look at the different projections that have been put into place, they are looking at more than just what the daily infection rates are. That's why I mentioned just now about the positivity rate. The WHO have indicated that anything less than 5% is the indicator for you to move out of lockdown. Right now, Malaysia is more than 7%. So it doesn't mean that we should be looking at less cases. What it should mean is that we should test more people so that more people can be treated earlier.
So Azrul, maybe you can just clarify this one point, because I think a lot of confusion gets brought up over positivity rate versus the average daily cases. Now, there are some of the concerns over average daily cases because it depends on the testing, right, capacity, essentially, yeah, and how much we're testing out there. What are some concerns with that, and how does this differ from using something like the positivity rate?
Well, you know, the problem with the current infection rate that we have right now is that it's influenced by weekends, public holidays, because basically it depends on how many tests you do for that particular period of time. If the testing rate goes down, the number of infections go down. That's not how you want to look at where we are in terms of the epidemic. That's why we use positivity rate. It basically indicates that if the positivity rate is high, that means that there are more people that are being tested who are positive in the groups that are already positive. So you want to spread it out as much as possible to go into the community and test as many people as possible to bring that positivity rate lower.
So bottom line, is it realistic to expect full reopening by the end of the year?
Well, to be honest, to my mind, this roadmap appears incredibly optimistic. The timeframe and milestones appear to be unrealistic. For example, the target of hitting 10% of the population fully vaccinated by the end of this month. You know, I wish it were possible and that I'm proven wrong. But the fact is that as of today, we have reached 10% of the population that has received at least one dose, but 4.3%. that have been fully vaccinated, and that is with two doses. Are we going to be able to recover? Are we able to to cover 6% with a second dose in the next 2 weeks? You know, I don't think so. The Pfizer vaccine has a 3-week interval, while the AstraZeneca vaccine has 8 to 12 weeks between doses. And the fact is that vaccine supplies are going to play a tremendously major role in whether we're going to get there to this target. The Economist Intelligence Unit actually projected that Malaysia would only reach at least 60% in quarter four of 2022, which is a year beyond Putrajaya's projections.
Is that the same projection that you share with EIU?
That definitely is from EIU, yes.
I mean, do you also share the same sentiment? Is that your
figure? Our projections really is more like quarter two, and quarter four is more of the worst case scenario, but I certainly hope that I'm proven wrong.
So the Drug Control Authority under the NPRA has issued conditional registration for emergency use of 2 single-dose COVID vaccines by China's CanSino Biologics and the US's Johnson & Johnson. So, you know, taking into account the fact that you mentioned vaccine supplies are going to play a very pivotal role in bringing down, in kind of helping us progress along this exit plan, how much of a boost will this be for our vaccination program?
Well, conditional registration does not necessarily mean that we are ordering them for the national vaccination program. The government has already ordered enough doses for 41.5 million people, or 130% of Malaysia's population. And that includes 3.5 million from CanSino Bio. However, if we did order more, then we should take advantage of the fact that these are single dose vaccines. So they would be incredibly useful for use in remote and rural areas, as well as with marginalized and vulnerable communities where the outreach is less regular and accessible, you know, such as migrants and undocumented individuals. So I do hope that it will be able to contribute, but right now the focus is basically getting the vaccines that we have already ordered for.
So overall, Azra, as we're going back, circling back to the early part of the conversation here about how this is going to be a long-term situation for the country, how do we prepare the healthcare system and society, I guess, to kind of manage this post-pandemic, or even as this becomes more of an endemic situation going forward?
Well, you know, one of the things that we need to be able to look at is that Malaysia, before this pandemic started, was ranked third in Asia and 18th amongst 195 countries in the Global Health Security Index in terms of overall readiness to face a disease outbreak. The index, which is produced by Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, the Nuclear Threat Initiative, and the Economist Intelligence Unit, actually placed Malaysia ahead of Singapore in the country's ability to respond to a public health emergency. So what we need to do is we need to prepare for the next pandemic, learning from this one. We need to learn from this experience, invest in the necessary people and infrastructure, and most importantly, do not underspend when it comes to health, because there is not going to be a post-pandemic world.
Azrul, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That was Azrul Mohamed Khalib, CEO at the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy, talking to us about how we need to proceed from a public health standpoint as we head into this, as we observe the government's announcement of a national recovery plan.
I don't know about you, but that last line he said, there's not going to be a post-pandemic world, that really stuck, right? Essentially, this is the, in a lot of ways, this is a World War II kind of incident, right? What the ramifications after this define what a quote-unquote new world could look like, because this is the first time we've seen such a global event across the world in such a big manner. But again, coming back to the National Recovery Plan, we asked you on Twitter whether you were confident in it. 62% said they were not confident at all. A lot of the tweets here are basically pointing towards the fact that it was not really a plan as towards targets, right? There were no real details as to how you're going to execute it. There is no one here is basically saying, so you're saying that we all just have to shut down till November, December. Like there's a lot of questions being asked about this, but that's it. It's still good to have these targets and KPIs in mind.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.